Welcome to the Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, September 22nd, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab, top right side of our website. And just a note here, you know, we read this every Monday. We make this point that NLA is an effort to save our republic. And we do know what Trump is doing and others, you know, to bring us back on course again. But only the people can save the republic. And we need to bring that republic back, and only by the people exercising their right of government by consent can they possibly save our republic. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of Luke. Let me set something up here. Okay, should have had this done before I started, but not all about this. Okay, we're in the Gospel of Luke. We're going to be looking at chapter 22, read by Alexander Scorby. Okay, Luke, read by Alexander Scorby, chapter 22.
Chapter 22. Now the feast of unleavened bread drew nigh, which is called the Passover, and the chief priests and scribes sought how they might kill him, for they feared the people. Then entered Satan into Judas, surnamed Iscariot, being of the number of the 12, and he went his way and communed with the chief priests and captains how he might betray him unto them. And they were glad, and covenanted to give him money. And he promised, and sought opportunity to betray him unto them in the absence of the multitude. Then came the day of unleavened bread, when the Passover must be killed. And he sent Peter and John, saying, Go and prepare us the Passover, that we may eat. And they said unto him, Where wilt thou that we prepare? And he said unto them, Behold, when ye are entered into the city, there shall a man meet you bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him into the house where he entereth in. And ye shall say unto the goodman of the house, The master saith unto thee, Where is the guest chamber where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples? And he shall show you a large upper room furnished. There make ready. And they went and found as he had said unto them, and they made ready the Passover. And when the hour was come, he sat down, and the 12 apostles with him. And he said unto them, With desire I have desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. For I say unto you, I will not any more eat thereof until it be fulfilled in the kingdom of God. And he took the cup, and gave thanks, and said, Take this, and divide it among yourselves. For I say unto you, I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God shall come. And he took bread, and gave thanks, and brake it, and gave unto them, saying, This is my body, which is given for you. This do in remembrance of me. Likewise also the cup after supper, saying, This cup is the New Testament in my blood, which is shed for you. But behold, the hand of him that betrayeth me is with me on the table. And truly the Son of Man goeth, as it was determined. But woe unto that man by whom he is betrayed. And they began to inquire among themselves which of them it was that should do this thing. And there was also a strife among them, which of them should be accounted the greatest. And he said unto them, The kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and they that exercise authority upon them are called benefactors. But ye shall not be so. But he that is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he that is chief, as he that doth serve. For whether is greater, he that sitteth at meat, or he that serveth? Is not he that sitteth at meat? But I am among you as he that serveth. Ye are they which have continued with me in my temptations. And I appoint unto you a kingdom, as my Father hath appointed unto me, that ye may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom, and sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not. And when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren. And he said unto him, Lord, I am ready to go with thee both into prison and to death. And he said, I tell thee, Peter, the cock shall not crow this day before that thou shalt thrice deny that thou knowest me. And he said unto them, When I sent you without purse and scrip and shoes, lacked ye anything? And they said, Nothing. Then said he unto them, But now, he that hath a purse, let him take it, and likewise his scrip. And he that hath no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one. For I say unto you, that this that is written must yet be accomplished in me. And he was reckoned oppressor. For the things concerning me have an end. And they said, Lord, behold, here are two swords. And he came out and went as he was wont to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples also followed him. And when he was at the place, he said unto them, Pray that ye enter not into temptation. And he was withdrawn from them about a stone's cast, and kneeled down and prayed, saying, Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. And there appeared an angel unto him from heaven, strengthening him. And being in an agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was as it were great drops of blood falling down to the ground. And when he rose up from prayer, and was come to his disciples, he found them sleeping for sorrow, and said unto them, Why sleep ye? Rise and pray, lest ye enter into temptation. And while he yet spake, behold, a multitude, and he that was called Judas, one of the 12, went before them, and drew near unto Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said unto him, Judas, betrayest thou the Son of Man with a kiss? When they which were about him saw what would follow, they said unto him, Lord, shall we smite with the sword? And one of them smote the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. And Jesus answered and said, Suffer ye thus far. And he touched his ear and healed him. Then Jesus said unto the chief priests and captains of the temple and the elders which were come to him, Be ye come out as against a thief, with swords and staves? When I was daily with you in the temple, ye stretched forth no hands against me. But this is your hour and the power of darkness. Then took they him and led him, and brought him into the high priest's house, and Peter followed afar off. And when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the hall, and were set down together, Peter sat down among them. But a certain maid beheld him as he sat by the fire, and earnestly looked upon him, and said, This man was also with him. And he denied him, saying, Woman, I know him not. And after a little while another saw him, and said, Thou art also of them. And Peter said, Man, I am not. And about the space of 1 hour after, another confidently affirmed, saying, Of a truth, this fellow also was with him, for he is a Galilean. And Peter said, Man, I know not what thou sayest. And immediately, while he yet spake, the cock crew. And the Lord turned and looked upon Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said unto him, Before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And Peter went out and wept bitterly. And the men that held Jesus mocked him and smote him. And when they had blindfolded him, they struck him on the face and asked him, saying, Prophesy, who is it that smote thee? and many other things blasphemously spake they against him. And as soon as it was day, the elders of the people and the chief priests and the scribes came together and led him into their council, saying, Art thou the Christ? Tell us. And he said unto them, If I tell you, ye will not believe. And if I also ask you, ye will not answer me, nor let me go. Hereafter shall the Son of Man sit on the right hand of the power of God. Then said they all, Art thou then the Son of God? And he said unto them, Ye say that I am. And they said, What need we any further witness? For we ourselves have heard of his own mouth.
Okay, Jan, we've got questions to make.
Yes, we have one question, John. It says, Does NLA approve of using one, a lawful notice, and two, an affidavit as per instructions on We the People 2 by Ron Bouchard Jr.?
Well, I'm not too sure that I understand the question. What was the first part of that? Does NLA support what?
Okay, does NLA approve of using one, a lawful notice, and two, an affidavit as per instructions on We the People 2 by Ron Bouchard Jr.? If you haven't read Ron Bouchard Jr., then you don't know what it is he says.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. You'd have to get more specific. So I couldn't really answer that question. Not enough information. And that's the only question we got tonight, huh?
Yeah, that's the only question. Maybe he'll be on the call and get on and clarify it.
Right. Okay, well, tonight we're going to do something a little bit different. So I'm going to play a video. I don't know how much of it I'm going to play. About 9 years ago, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury put forward an indictment against numerous people and very powerful people, and the FBI and many others, local police, and even a sheriff's department from one of the counties in the assassination of Lavoie Finicken. And so we did an investigation on that. It was a 600-page investigation, and also we had collected numerous videos. Now also we have a forensic video that was professionally done concerning the assassination. We had a lot of video from drones at the time that we were able to get a hold of, and an expert in forensic did the report on this. So that's the video we're going to play tonight. And again, I don't know how much we're going to play of it, but this is an important video. Back in July, Cash, the FBI director, he brought together, well, let me see what we have here real quick. Yeah, FBI director Cash Patel. Okay, he honored the murder team of Lavoie Finicken. And it was pretty shocking when I heard about this. And I know a lot of people are upset that know about Lavoie Finicken and the assassination, what took place out west there, with the Hammonds and the Bundys and many, many others, and of course, Lavoie Finicken. And these were ranchers, and the federal government was out trying to steal their land, prevent them from going forward because they were trying to work something out with plutonium. It was rich in that area, and they were trying to cut the ranches off so that they can move forward. And this was really put together, a lot of this, believe it or not, by Clinton. Hillary Clinton sold this to Russia, and that's what this was all about. Now, I'm not surprised Cash Patel may not have been aware of exactly what took place out there. And his reports came, of course, from the FBI and a lot of problems with the FBI and even with the court system. A lot of problems with the court system, as we all know. We've been dealing with this problem for quite some time. So I'm going to play this video for a while, and then we'll open up for some questions or comments or any kind of a discussion we can get into. Now, this is a video for those who might be coming in on a phone without being able to see the desktop, but you'll hear the audio. Of course, the more powerful part of this is in watching the video along with the audio as this individual goes through the process of laying out exactly what did happen there. So we're going to be doing a presentment to the President of the United States, and with a focus, of course, with Attorney General Bondi and of course, Kash Patel, at least those three individuals. We're going to probably copy all of this to about 40 people. Now, the report, and we might add the indictment to all 40 people, but as far as all of the evidence, and, you know, it's 600-plus pages and lots of videos. And so we're not going to be copying everyone with all of that information. We'll probably put some download links in the papers where these individuals go out and look at all this stuff, all of the evidence, the videos, and also the written evidence. But as far as to Attorney General Bondi, President Trump, and FBI Director Kash Patel, we'll be sending them the full report, a little over 600 pages. And again, we'll probably do thumb drives. I was going to do some discs, but I realize thumb drive is probably the best way to go. It's smaller, and we can get a lot more videos and information onto that thumb drive. So anyway, we'll be sending that out to all of these individuals. So let's take a look and do this, and we'll talk a little bit about this topic after we're done. Now, there's a lot of people, like I said, this was about 9 years ago that we did this indictment. So there are people, you know, with us that may not be familiar with what took place out west and what they did with LaVoy Finnegan. And they tried to take out numerous, they tried to take Bundy out because he was in the vehicle with LaVoy and a very young girl. I don't know how old she was, maybe 15 years old. That's what she looked like to me. I don't know what the age was. I don't remember. But she was a young girl and then another individual, another woman. Okay, so we'll play the video uninterrupted, and I'm not sure how long we're going to go, but it's a pretty powerful video, forensic proof that LaVoy Finnegan was set up and he was assassinated.
In this video, evidence will be presented showing that the murder of LaVoy Finnegan by the FBI was premeditated. Evidence will be presented that will answer conclusively the question of why LaVoy did not stop at the roadblock and determine with certainty whether or not LaVoy was attempting to stop or attempting to run the roadblock. It will be shown that many of the events that have been previously blamed on LaVoy and on the other occupants of the truck were in fact intentionally caused by the FBI and Oregon State Police for the purpose of justifying the killing of LaVoy. You will see an unmistakable and repeated pattern of the FBI and Oregon State Police doing everything in their power to provoke violence in order to justify the killing of LaVoy. This was an elaborately staged, premeditated murder by the FBI in which every detail was planned out. In the following clip, Shauna Cox, who took the cell phone video from within LaVoy's truck, describes the events of the first shot and how it led to LaVoy fleeing in his truck from the first stop.
And so Ryan Payne talks to LaVoy and saying, look, dude, you need to kind of slow down. You better pull over because they're gaining up on us. So finally, reluctantly, LaVoy slows down and pulls over. And he didn't pull very far over because it's a snowy road. But he slows down and he stops. And Ryan Payne rolls down the window and he sticks both hands out the window and he yells back at the, I'm guessing whoever it was with the flashing lights, and he yells back at him. It hadn't been 2 seconds probably, and his hands are out, and a shot comes through and misses his hands. I thought it hit him, but it hit the mirror, the little thing between the mirror and the window. And so that was the first shot fired. And he yanked back in really fast. And he goes, "Wow, they're shooting at us." Well, it was unbelievable. And we're going, "Oh, what?" And Lavoie was going to go on. And when I looked up, and he has on the back of his head, he has a laser pointing on the top of his hat. There's a laser beam on his head. And he leans out in front of the mirror, out of the window, and he puts his hand out, and he has one on the steering wheel, and he yells back at them. And he says, then shoot me, because we're going to see the sheriff. We have a meeting with the sheriff and John Day, so just go ahead and shoot me if that's what you're going to do. Ryan said, "There's women in the truck. And he says, somebody from the back says, "Tell the women to get out. If they want to get out, tell them to get out." Lavoie says, "If you guys want out, then get out." Well, you know, really my door was still locked. But Victoria was freaked out already because we had already seen a bullet. And she said, "I'm not getting out." When my mother instinct kicks in, and I said, "I don't leave it her. So I guess we're here." And we slunk down and he took off.
So he put his hand out the window. He was trying to talk to them. He's like, he wanted the guy to get. He's like, "I don't know if it's worth it." He's like, "So he just has to go out the window." He said, "We have to leave it. We can get out." And he stuck his foot out and we stopped.
The officers fired at Ryan Payne when Ryan Payne was attempting to talk with them. They said that they fired in order to get the occupants of the truck to comply. An unprovoked shot will not get people to comply. Victoria's response of wanting to stay in the truck is a natural response. Ryan's response of getting out of the truck after an unprovoked shot is not a normal response. So why did Ryan Payne get out of the truck after being shot at? Ryan Payne fits the profile of an agent provocateur almost exactly. He played a major role in turning the protest into an armed occupation and was often trying to convince people to be willing to die for the cause. The unprovoked shot at Ryan Payne was very strategic and served several purposes for the FBI. This shot gave Ryan Payne a way to exit the truck before the real shooting started without revealing his real role as an agent provocateur. This shot also provoked the other people to stay in the truck, and it provoked Lavoie to flee. If the plan was to kill Lavoie at the roadblock, this shot was necessary to get Lavoie to flee. According to the officer's statements, they were planning more shots with gas rounds. They claimed it was to prevent Lavoie from driving off, but it is more logical to conclude that its purpose was to encourage Lavoie to drive off. When Lavoie flees from the first stop, Officer 4 pursues. Officer 4 speaks about his own speed and states, "I probably even hit close to 90. Since there is a roadblock just over a mile away, chasing Lavoie at high speeds is a bad decision. He is unlikely to overtake Lavoie since the roadblock is too close. Chasing Lavoie at high speeds would only encourage Lavoie to drive faster and create a dangerous situation at the roadblock. The real purpose of chasing Lavoie was to encourage Lavoie to drive faster in order to create a high-speed crash at the roadblock."
What about Amon and those guys? We can't get around him. I'm going to go get help.
Okay.
I'm waiting. I can call as soon as I get service.
Wait up. Yeah, keep watching the phone so if you get any service.
I don't have any.
I can't even get Joe Ray.
They're coming up fast.
Yeah, they are.
Okay, I don't know about numbers.
Well, I got numbers, but I can't call because we have no service. No, mobile network not available.
Do you have numbers for people here in town?
The video has been stopped at the point where Lavoie's brake lights come on. As Lavoie's truck approaches the roadblock, 3 shots will be fired at his truck.
Hey,
okay, they're shooting.
Hey,
I'm here.
This is the map view of the roadblock. Lavoie approached from the south. The roadblock was first visible here. It was first recognizable as a roadblock here. Lavoie began braking here. The roadblock was positioned here. Notice that the roadblock is positioned on the curve, making it dangerous. However, there is a straight stretch of road just beyond the roadblock. The FBI could have positioned the roadblock further down this straight stretch of road for a safer roadblock, but they chose the more dangerous location. This shows the two views of the road from the position of the roadblock. The photo on the left shows the view looking south in the direction that Lavoie approached. The photo on the right shows the view beyond the roadblock looking north. You can see that the southern approach to the roadblock is a dangerous blind curve, while the northern view shows a very visible straight stretch of road. This shows that there were safe positions for the roadblock that were easily available, but the FBI chose the dangerous position. It is not only the blind curve that makes this roadblock dangerous. This is the nearest speed limit sign before the curve, which shows a speed limit of 65 miles per hour. Many other blind curves in the area have a speed limit of 40 miles per hour. This is not only a blind curve, but the speed limit is higher. The curve has a significant downhill slope as it approaches the roadblock. This graph is from Google Earth, and it shows the elevation profile of the approach to the roadblock. The roadblock is first visible here. The roadblock is positioned here. Just after the roadblock is visible, the slope of the hill is more than a 10% downhill grade, according to Google Earth. In addition, just before the roadblock becomes visible, the slope changes suddenly from nearly flat to a steep downhill slope. These factors greatly increase the risk of a crash as a result of the position of this roadblock. This picture is a composite view of Lavoie's approach to the roadblock. This is the point where the roadblock first became visible. This is the point where Lavoie began applying his brakes. Looking backward from when Lavoie applied his brakes, if we assume a normal reaction time of 1 second, this is the point where Lavoie first recognized the roadblock. If we assume a reasonable but slower reaction time of 2.5 seconds, this is where Lavoie first recognized the roadblock. This is the position where the first shot was taken. This is the position where the second shot was taken. And this is the third shot position. This position is where the roadblock is first visible, according to the major incident team. They seem to think that Lavoie had plenty of time to see the roadblock. In a few seconds, I will show you a recreation of the view from near this point. See how long it takes you to recognize any hazards on the road. Here it is. You saw the view for the same amount of time as it took for Lavoie to recognize the roadblock. Did you recognize the roadblock? Here is a view from the point where Lavoie recognized the roadblock. Did you recognize the roadblock? Would you have slammed on your brakes? If you answered yes, then you have failed this simple test. There was no roadblock in these two views. They were a safe situation with trucks parked beside the road in a roadside pullout. This is a comparison of a safe situation on the left compared with a roadblock on the right. I have added a 3-foot snowbank to simulate the conditions that day. The snowbank combined with the curve makes it hard to tell the difference between a safe situation and a roadblock. Here is the same set of views without the snowbank. Now you can tell the difference between the safe situation and the roadblock. However, because of the curve, it is still difficult to recognize the difference. It is only when you see the roadblock unobstructed by the snowbank and without the distortion of the curve that it is clearly recognizable. This is two views from the point where Lavoie recognized the roadblock. The safe situation is on the left and the roadblock is on the right. It is at this point that the difference is becoming noticeable and the roadblock is recognizable. Here is the same set of views without the snowbank. Now we will look at the Oregon Department of Transportation Highway Design Manual. To determine when Lavoie should have been able to recognize the roadblock, we need to understand the stopping site distance. Stopping sight distance is the minimum distance required for a vehicle traveling at a particular design speed to come to a complete stop after an obstacle on the road becomes visible. Stopping sight distance is normally sufficient to allow an alert and prudent driver to come to a hurried stop under normal circumstances. Stopping sight distance is measured from the driver's eye to an object 2 feet above the roadway surface. For the stopping sight distance, the driver must be able to see an object 2 feet off the ground. There is a 3-foot snowbank along the road. This means that the stopping sight distance must be measured at the first point where the snowbank does not block the vision of the roadblock. This snowbank here is what would block the vision of the roadblock. Also note that if this is a 3-foot snowbank, then the snowbank here is clearly greater than 3 feet, and this is where it matters most. A green dotted line has been placed on the boundary of where the snowbank would obscure vision of the roadblock. It goes from the center of the roadblock and through the snowbank. When a driver reaches this line, they can see that at least one truck is blocking the road ahead. I am calling this the point where the roadblock is recognizable, and this is the point where the stopping sight distance should be measured. The distance from the roadblock is 470 feet. This is the point where Lavoie applied his brakes. This is the point where he recognized the roadblock if you assume he was alert with the reaction time of 1 second. This is the point where he recognized the roadblock if you assume he was less alert with a reaction time of 2.5 seconds. Anywhere in between these is a reasonable reaction time. The point where the roadblock is recognizable falls within this range. This means that the point where Lavoie recognized the roadblock was within the expected range for a normal driver. This also means that Lavoie began braking at the expected time for a normal driver. According to the Highway Design Manual, the stopping sight distance for 65 miles per hour is 645 feet. Since this is greater than the 470 feet measured, this means that the roadblock does not meet the recommended design specs from the Highway Design Manual. This roadblock was not designed to be safe. Furthermore, the point where Lavoie recognized the roadblock is at the expected location based upon the stopping sight distance. Lavoie was not at fault for not braking earlier. The designers of the roadblock were responsible. At this point, Lavoie is about to begin braking. Pay attention to the brake lights on the truck. You will see that once Lavoie's brake lights come on, they stay on the entire time. Now I will answer the following questions. Why did Lavoie fail to stop at the roadblock? Was Lavoie attempting to stop, or was Lavoie attempting to run the roadblock? In order to answer these questions, a detailed computer analysis of the speed of Lavoie's truck was created. This was done using an image tracking program that was created for this type of analysis. By using a computer cross-correlation tracking method, the motion of Lavoie's truck was tracked relative to the video image. Multiple objects on the ground were also tracked to get the motion of the ground relative to the video image. By combining these two measurements, the motion of Lavoie's truck relative to the ground was calculated. The result is a graph of the speed of Lavoie's truck calculated at an interval of 1/30th of a second. This is the speed graph that resulted from this analysis. It is a graph of speed in miles per hour as a function of time in seconds. This is the point at which Lavoie's brake lights first came on. This is the point at which Lavoie's truck first entered the snow. The steep slope of the graph here is due to the truck quickly stopping in the snow. This point here is near where Lavoie first recognized the roadblock. At this point, it appears that Lavoie took his foot off of the gas. This delay of about 1 second between where Lavoie recognized the roadblock and where he first began applying his brakes is consistent with the normal reaction time of an alert driver. The part of the graph that we are most concerned with is after Lavoie first applied the brakes and before he entered the snow. Initially, this downward slope indicates that Lavoie began braking. However, at this point, he paused his braking. At this point, the downward slope of the graph indicates that he began braking again. At this point, Lavoie paused his braking again before entering the snow. I have superimposed my interpretation of the graph, showing in yellow the times when Lavoie was braking, and in blue the times when Lavoie paused his braking. At first, Lavoie brakes for about 1 second and then pauses. The second breaking is minimal. The third breaking event is the strongest. Lavoie is breaking the hardest at this point. The unusual feature is that after each breaking event, there is a pause with no detectable breaking. Since the brake lights remain on the entire time, we know that Lavoie is still breaking, but during the pauses, there is no substantial deceleration. This graph is very unusual. Why would Lavoie brake and then pause his braking multiple times within the span of about 3 seconds? Was Lavoie indecisive on whether to brake or not, or was something interfering with his ability to brake? Now we will look at this first braking event more closely. If Lavoie had continued braking at this rate, he would have been able to stop in 407 feet. The typical emergency stopping distance for 70 miles per hour is listed as 375 feet for dry pavement and 686 feet for wet pavement. Although there is visible water on the road in several locations, Lavoie is stopping at a rate more consistent with dry pavement. The slope of the braking event is consistent with the minimum stopping distance if the coefficient of friction is 0.46. This is within the expected parameters of a normal driver making an emergency stop. This line represents a vehicle stopping at the minimum stopping distance, assuming a coefficient of friction of 0.5. This would be a reasonable graph for dry pavement. This line represents a vehicle stopping at the minimum stopping distance, assuming a coefficient of friction of 0.4. This would be a reasonable graph for wet pavement. Lavoie's braking fits within these lines and is completely consistent with Lavoie attempting to stop as quickly as possible. Now we will look at the third braking event. This line represents a vehicle stopping at the minimum stopping distance, assuming a coefficient of friction of 0.5. This would be a reasonable graph for dry pavement. Again, Lavoie is attempting to stop as quickly as possible. When Lavoie was braking hard, he was braking as hard as a normal driver stopping as quickly as possible. Lavoie failed to stop because he did not continue braking. The question that must be answered now is why Lavoie did not continue braking. In order to explain the unusual pauses in braking, more events have been added to the graph. Here the timing of shots as heard on the video from the truck cab have been added. Now it is clear why Lavoie paused his braking. The first shot was fired after Lavoie had been braking hard for about 1 second. After each shot fired at Lavoie, there is a pause in braking. Lavoie was surprised by the shots. In addition to being startled, it is a natural response to pull inward in response to a shot. However, braking requires extending the leg. A pause in the braking graph is what would be expected as a result of the shots. The data is clear. It shows that Lavoie was attempting to stop. The reason that Lavoie failed to stop was that the three shots fired at him disrupted his braking and prevented him from stopping in time. There was a skid mark on the road found by the major incident team. It is shown here in their report. I have placed the skid mark on the graph, assuming that it was made by the front tires of Lavoie's truck. The location of the skid mark matches exactly the point where Lavoie began braking the hardest. This also confirms that at this time he was braking as hard as possible and consistent with the minimum stopping distance. I have also placed the point where Lavoie's truck begins turning towards the snow. This will be important for determining what Lavoie's intentions were as he swerved into the snow. Now I will address specifically the question of whether or not Lavoie attempted to run the roadblock. The data shows that initially Lavoie was attempting to stop and therefore could not have been trying to run the roadblock. However, there still remains the possibility that at some point Lavoie changed his mind and decided to run the roadblock. If Lavoie was attempting to run the roadblock, he should have begun accelerating after he had determined a path around the roadblock, but before entering the snow. He would need to gain enough speed to make it through the snow. The point that Lavoie should have accelerated is at the point he began turning towards the snow or soon after. The red curve represents the projected curve if Lavoie had decided to run the roadblock. At the point that Lavoie would have needed to accelerate, he was stopping as quickly as possible and even left a skid mark. Lavoie's actions were exactly opposite to what he would have done if he were trying to run the roadblock. The data could not be any clearer. Lavoie was attempting to stop the entire time. Lavoie never attempted to run the roadblock. Now the events inside the truck cab will be shown to be consistent with the speed graph. Along with the cab view, a graph representing deceleration will be shown on the right. It measures deceleration in feet per second squared. The event is labeled in the yellow bar to represent the events on the graph. The labels correspond to the events on the speed graph as 1, 2, 3, and snow breaking. The entire graph will flash red to signify the timing of the shots. First, the video segment will be shown at normal speed. You should notice that Ryan's shoulder is pushed up against the seat in front of him on the first and third braking events. The third braking event is short, and Ryan actually bounces off the seat in front of him.
People here in town?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm shooting. Hey, I'm here.
The events are hard to follow at normal speed. Here it is again at 25% speed. Now it will be shown at 10% normal speed. You should be able to see Ryan bounce off the seat in front on the third event. You might also notice that after the first shot, Ryan begins to duck at the same time that Lavoie pauses his braking, showing that Lavoie pausing his braking is a normal response to the shot, as is ducking. The events inside the truck cab are consistent with the speed graph, and all of the major events on the speed graph show visible effects in the cab view video. This is verification that the speed graph and its interpretation are correct. The officer's stated intent of stopping the vehicle by shooting at it is impossible in this situation. Because of the close distance and because Lavoie's truck is already headed towards the roadblock, the only way to stop it before crashing into the roadblock is either with the brakes or the steering. The most likely result of shooting at Lavoie's vehicle is to prevent it from stopping, and according to the data, that is what actually happened. Lavoie began stopping at the expected position and began stopping at the expected rate for a normal driver. The fact that Lavoie failed to stop was primarily due to the dangerous placement of the roadblock and shooting at Lavoie as he attempted to stop. Now we will look at the two shots fired at Lavoie as he exits the truck. No one, not even the major incident team, has attempted to justify these shots as reasonable. These shots are consistent with trying to provoke Lavoie in order to justify killing Lavoie. These shots are believed to be fired by the FBI, but they were not revealed by the FBI. The major incident team discovered these shots. Even Sheriff Nelson seems quite upset with the FBI for not revealing these shots. These shots are consistent with premeditated murder and completely inconsistent with the official story.
prepared.
This FBI agent is kneeling in the snow and is armed with foam bullets. As soon as Lavoy becomes visible to him, he will fire a foam bullet hitting Lavoy in the left side of his chest. The FBI agent will immediately run away. The purpose of this shot is to cause Lavoy to reach for the wound, which will appear on the video as if he is reaching for a gun. This will be the final justification for killing Lavoy.
Stay down.
Lavoy has now lowered his arms in response to being shot with a foam bullet, and the FBI agent runs away because it is important that this shot is not discovered. This shot by itself is enough to prove premeditated murder. I have devoted an entire video to this shot and the evidence for it. For the purpose of this video, I will assume this shot is established as fact. This shot was not revealed by the FBI or the major incident team. Here is the foam bullet shot again at a slower speed. Now you will see the foam bullet shot followed by the three shots in the back that kill Lavoy. All previous shots, as well as the position of the roadblock, were designed to set up the situation that would justify these shots.
Stay down. Are they shooting him? Did I shoot him? You asshole. Stay down.
After Mr. Finnicum was shot, numerous gas projectiles and flashbangs were deployed to get the remaining occupants of the truck, Ryan Bundy, Shauna Cox, and Victoria Sharp, to surrender peacefully.
In the interview with Officer One, after Lavoy has been killed, Officer One describes how they dealt with the remaining occupants of the truck. He states that they were attempting to get the rest of the people in the vehicle to comply and take them into custody. Further down, he describes multiple diversions to try to distract the people that were in the vehicle and try to get them to comply with the verbal commands that I was hearing being yelled. Later, Officer One states, "I knew the multi-launcher would have orange tips, meaning that they would contain OCCS chemical agents in them, and that they were going to deploy those rounds into the truck as minutes had lapsed and the occupants in the truck were not complying with commands. They were not exiting the truck within a reasonable amount of time whatsoever. There was no reason they couldn't have exited the truck and complied with the commands. Gas was deployed into the truck. There was still a period of time where they were not coming out." In the interview with Officer 4, Officer 4 states, "After Finnicum went down, shortly after that, there's some flashbangs going off around the area. I'm near Finnicum's truck. There was really no response from anybody inside or anything like that." Later, Officer 4 states, "Some chemical agent starts getting introduced in the vehicle. I mean, it seems like it had no effect. Then some more got introduced in the vehicle. A little bit more, a little bit later on, more kind of rapid, a succession." And later he states, "So it didn't really seem like it had a real big effect on occupants left inside." In the interview with Officer 7, when asked about the effect of the chemical rounds fired in the truck, Officer 7 stated, "I don't know what effect it had initially on the people inside. The intent was just to introduce that powder into the cab and try and get them to come out." Later, he states, "I recall the general commands I kept hearing were, you know, let me see your hands, step out of the vehicle. But I can't tell you who was saying it or what. I mean, it was being yelled by multiple people all around me." Here is a summary of the statements made by the three officers. Next, you will see the video from inside the cab during the time after Lavoie was killed. You should try to answer the following questions as you watch this. What are the commands that are given? Why are the occupants of the truck not responding? Why are the occupants of the truck not obeying commands?
Stay down. Stay down. Stay down.
$10 for you. Oh my God, it's so in a ball for us.
You asshole.
We lost them, so let me see.
Dump it out.
Are you hit?
Oh, hold on, hold on. Don't do anything. What the hell is Lavoie? Yeah.
I can't see.
Shut up. Stay down. Stay down.
I'm watching a video by my phone. Right. I'm making this. I think they did this over here on this door.
Got hit too.
Okay, hold still.
I don't know. It didn't.
Hold still.
Ryan, where did you get
hit?
I'm not bleeding.
Okay, don't shoot.
Where did you get hit, Ryan?
Okay.
I'm going to take some.
It's okay.
I'm taking some. Keep down. Oh, shit. Well, I don't know. Get out of the car. How are we supposed to get out of the car?
Did they tell us to get out of the car?
No, I can't hear anything. I don't dare get out of the car. Oh, shit. Quit shooting the windows.
Where are they shooting at?
They're hitting the windows. I don't know. They're trying to break their window.
God, keep us safe, please.
Please, please protect us.
Please, God.
Please protect us. Please protect us. Please protect us. We need help. We need help. We need help.
Did they kill him? They killed him?
I can see a laser coming in.
Oh my God, they killed him.
Okay. So where's the rest of everyone?
Are you okay?
I can see lasers going by.
Where did you get hit?
I'm okay.
He's got lasers.
Got a laser.
Keep your head down. I can see the laser. If you see a laser, keep it away.
Dude,
there's a laser on your knee. Stop! I don't dare get out because they'll shoot me. Okay.
I don't like hunker down here either.
Me either, but I don't know what to do because they keep shooting lasers at us.
Two stinking lax. Think things are just all dandy and fine. We got two damn lax.
Yeah. Damn, why do they keep shooting?
I'm trying to take my head off. I was looking for
them. I know, but all of us? Stop!
Please!
Stop!
Yes.
Ridiculous. These are stupid. Are you going to kill all of us? Father, please.
Those were gas rounds.
Yeah, they were. They're right up your nose. But... Can we get out? Do I get out?
We're going to get out.
I can't breathe. Okay.
Okay, there's
lasers still on us.
We got lasers still on us. Lavoie got out. I think they've killed Lavoie. They just shot gas rounds into the car. We're bunkered down in here trying not to
get shot.
Shooting more gas rounds. The gas is getting pretty thick in here.
You think I don't do it?
Anyway.
I don't know how to get out. Will they shoot me?
Yeah, they'll shoot you.
How am I going to get out?
Can we put a white flag out?
Yeah, I would put a flag out. Let's put a flag out.
Do you have a white flag? Yep.
I'm not sure what they got. What you got?
There's a laser sheet right over here, Randis.
Okay. The gas dissipates.
He's trying to break this window. He's trying to break the window in half.
Okay.
Does anybody have anything white? Does he look like a white bra on?
I think, sure enough, he's a laser trying to shoot this window.
Days ago.
He's got this window open here.
Speak to people. Ambushed us on the way to John Day. And now they're shooting into our vehicle. And we're hunkered down. We do not have phone service at this location.
Surrender.
Okay, I don't know what's going on. Let's get up.
Okay.
That's you, Ryan. I don't know if you can get up. You get up first. Let her in first. Let her out first. You go first. Okay, go.
Okay, I get
out. Okay, get out.
Okay.
No, shoot Ryan first. Well, shoot you first, Ryan. Hands up. Shit.
According to the video, no commands were given until after the last gas round was fired. The occupants of the truck made numerous attempts to communicate. These attempts to communicate were either ignored or suppressed with gunfire. When the first command was given, the occupants of the truck immediately responded and immediately complied. All OC rounds were used before the first command was given. Every single shot fired at the occupants of the truck is consistent with the FBI attempting to escalate the situation and provoke violence in a way that can later be blamed on the occupants of the truck. In fact, the three officers have been caught trying to blame the occupants of the truck for actions that the FBI and Oregon State Police created. When Victoria wanted to get out of the truck to help Lavoie, this would have been a perfect opportunity for the officers to end the situation peacefully. Victoria wanted to help Lavoie. She wanted out of the truck, and she tried to communicate. The response to the door opening was two immediate shots. No one from the FBI attempted to start a dialogue with Victoria. The two shots send a message. The message is, if you try to get out of the truck, the FBI will kill you. And do not attempt to communicate with the FBI.
I can't get out.
Stop it out.
Are you hit?
Oh, hold on. Don't do anything.
This next video segment demonstrates the FBI's attitude very well and what their intent is. Shauna's and Victoria's attempt to communicate is met with a barrage of gunfire. The obvious message from the FBI is that they do not want any attempts to communicate and that they are trying to convince the remaining occupants of the truck that they will all be killed.
Ridiculous. These are stupid. I can kill all of us?
In this next video segment, since all of their attempts to communicate with the FBI have been met with either silence or gunfire, Victoria is being more creative in finding ways to communicate. This shows that the occupants of the truck are doing everything in their power to communicate.
Do we put a white flag out?
Yeah, I would put a flag out. Let's put a flag out.
Do you have a white flag?
In this next video segment, notice that the behavior of the FBI has radically changed. Now they are giving commands and the occupants of the truck comply immediately. The FBI's original plan was to remove the option of communicating and exiting the truck peacefully. They wanted the occupants of the truck to believe that their only option was to fight back. This would give the FBI justification for killing everyone. This plan failed because the occupants of the truck were clearly prepared to die before fighting back, even though they had guns in the truck. Because the occupants of the truck did not fight back as the FBI wanted, the FBI had to cancel their plans to kill them all, and now they are trying to act like real policemen. The commands now are clearly heard. This shows that the only reason that commands were not heard before is that either no commands were given or that they were not intended to be heard.
Okay, I don't know what's going on. Let's get out.
Okay.
That's you, Ryan. I don't know if you can get up. You get up first. Let her in first. Let her out first. You go first. You go first. Go. Go.
Okay, I get out.
Okay, get out.
Okay.
No, he'll shoot Ryan first. He'll shoot you first, Ryan. Hands up. Hands up. Sit. Okay. Okay, go. Strong hands up. Go, go.
There is an important pattern of escalating the violence that is seen in nearly every action made by the FBI and Oregon State Police. An officer will make an action that escalates the violence. The officer will blame the escalated violence on the victim and use it to justify more violence. The officer's excuse, if given, will be illogical and opposite to the logical result of the action. A specific sub-pattern of the previous pattern also occurs frequently, where the officer shoots at those who try to comply with the FBI. When a person tries to comply with commands, an officer shoots at them, preventing them from complying. The officer then uses the failure to comply with commands to justify more violence. Here is the justification for the shot at Ryan Payne at the first stop.
The Oregon State Police fired one less lethal OC round at the truck to gain compliance.
The occupants of the truck did not comply because of the shot, and Lavoie fled because of the shot. Here is the justification for the three shots at Lavoie as he was stopping at the roadblock.
An Oregon State Police trooper who was standing at the roadblock fired three shots into the truck in an attempt to stop it.
Lavoie was stopping before he was shot at. Lavoie was unable to stop because of the three shots. Here is the justification for 5 minutes of shooting at the remaining occupants of the truck.
After Mr. Finnicum was shot, numerous gas projectiles and flashbangs were deployed to get the remaining occupants of the truck, Ryan Bundy, Shauna Cox, and Victoria Sharp, to surrender peacefully.
The occupants of the truck tried to surrender peacefully just after Lavoie was shot. They were unable to surrender because of the numerous shots fired at them. All of these shots both escalated the violence and prevented compliance. All of these shots created the exact situation that the officers claimed they were trying to prevent. The results were logical. The excuses are not logical. There was no legitimate purpose for the first stop since there was a roadblock up ahead. The first stop merely created the opportunity to create a high-speed chase into the roadblock. When Ryan Payne was attempting to talk about how to get people out of the truck, the officers fired at him, claiming that they were trying to get people to comply. When Lavoie made the logical response to an unprovoked shot and fled, the officers used this as justification for more violence.
Okay, we're going to stop the video there. It does go on for a little further. If anybody wants to, I know there's at least two people here on phones, so they didn't see the video. If they want to see the video, or anyone that wants to review the video again, or miss part of the video, or would like to see the rest of the video, you can find that up on our Rumble page. Should be able to find it. Let's see. On the right-hand side of our website, if you come down a little bit, you'll see our Rumble link to our channel, and you can get it right here. This is the video right here, but we're not going to play that, of course. All right, I guess what we'll do is we'll open up for questions, but before we do that, I want to just make a few points. Our plan really is, and it really pushed us to consider doing what we're doing, which is a presentment and a refiling of the original indictment. There's numerous people that should have been tried for this other than the FBI. There are people behind it. We're going to look a little bit at the presentment that we're putting together. Well, not trying to say the presentment, but the indictment that we had put together. Like I said, I think this was about 9 years ago. And then with the presentment, and again, what's pushing this is because of what Kash Patel did. In July, he made some, let's see if we can find some info on this. He honors the agents involved in Lavoie-Finucane standoff. Now, I don't believe that Kash Patel is a bad guy, and I don't believe, I believe that he just never received the true information. Even the court system was fixed and controlled. And we know we have corrupt courts. Nobody gets justice in these courts if they don't want you to. If you're going up against the status quo, you're going to lose. There is no constitution. There is no natural law. There is no Bill of Rights in our courts. It doesn't exist. For those who don't have experience in the courts may find that hard to believe. But I can assure you that what I just said is absolutely true. And I know anybody that's been spending time in the courts trying to get justice from this out-of-control government, but now being brought back into control, thank God. Nevertheless, you don't win. The courts are totally out of control. They're still rogue. They still refuse to open courts of justice. They refuse to give you a trial by jury. And if they give you a trial by jury, it's going to be a rigged trial by jury. They will prevent evidence from coming in. And that's in their rules. The rules created the ability for judges to deny certain evidence. In natural law, all evidence is accepted. Even if people think it's no evidence at all, the individual has a right to bring that evidence up if they believe that it's something that will shine justice or light on justice in the courts. So again, that's why we're going to refile this paper. You know, we did file this in the federal courts, but we're going to refile it again, but through presentment. We're going to file it again to the individual that most needs to have this, and that would be, of course, Attorney General Bondi. We want to, of course, copy the president on this, and we want to get the information to Kash Patel, and he needs to come out to repent his thoughts and ideas and explain why he did what he did as far as honoring these individuals. And, of course, it's probably because the bad reports that were given to him from the underlings are... you know, a lot of these agencies, there's a lot of sleepers in there. There's a lot of people that still are preventing us from returning to justice anywhere within our government. But this will also give us the opportunity. We've been sending presentments to President Trump for quite some time now. I believe we sent four already. This might be the fifth, or we sent three, and this will be the fourth. I'm not sure. But we did send the presentments. We've sent all this information to everyone in his around Trump, every single one in his cabinet, and numerous other people, a total of about 47 people. We sent copies of government by consent books to all of these individuals, and some of them are congressmen and some of them are senators. Of course, Johnson got one, you know, Congressman Johnson. So it's going to give us an opportunity to redress again some of the things we've already spoken to Trump about and others. It's going to give us the opportunity to really put the focus on our courts. And I do know that Trump realizes that the federal courts are corrupt and it needs house cleaning, but it really needs a total house cleaning. We did do an indictment on the entire federal judiciary because the entire federal judiciary has closed our courts of justice. They have not allowed anybody to come in to get justice in their courts. But this is not just on the federal end. This is on the state end also. All states, all 50 states have the same problem. This gives us the opportunity to go in with this. Again, it's an indictment with 600 pages of evidence and numerous videos. Goodness, I'm not sure how many videos. I haven't counted them yet, but there's probably about 15 or 16, maybe even more, videos of evidence. It's going to give us the opportunity to reiterate our concerns concerning the abrogation of natural law and replaced it with civil law. They did this through the 1934 Rules Enabling Act, and in 1938 is when the bar-controlled Supreme Court came up with the rules and the rules of evidence, totally destroying our common law. Even under equity, legislated law, the only law provided by the Constitution, there's two. One is equity, that's also called positive law, but is also referred to as legislative law. And legislative law, the purpose of legislative law, of course, is to control commercial activity, in the case of the federal, interstate commercial activity, and also to control government agents within the agencies, setting up regulations, statutes that they must follow and obey. But nowhere in the Constitution, we the people ordained and established the Constitution, so we're above that law. We never gave them the law or the ability to write law to control the people's behavior, only to control their own behavior is the only information we gave. So there's equity and there's law. The word law in Black's Law Dictionary, you'll read about it also in Black's Blackstone, you'll read about it in Bovee Ears. Law is that which proceeds according to the common law, and it refers very directly to natural law. The Declaration of Independence makes it clear that the foundation of our law is the laws of nature and of nature's God. That brings us under the law of natural law. And we've discussed this many times. If any people have questions on natural law, they can ask the questions when we open up the queue. By the way, the queue is open. Anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a star 6 and 1 to get into the queue. If you're on a phone, and if you're on an app or browser, should be a button if you want to get into the queue. The other thing this is going to give us the opportunity is to return to our natural law republic, reinstate the original 13th Amendment. And for those who are not familiar with the original 13th Amendment, I found a lot of our founding fathers were still alive, and then still Jefferson was still active at the time, and it was 1819 or 1818 when it was finally passed, the 13th Amendment, which prevents anyone holding a title of honor from holding any office of trust. It means they cannot be elected. They cannot be officers in the court. All bar attorneys are esquires. That's a title of honor. You'll see often a lot of attorneys will have the word esquire on their business cards or on their door that into their office or whatever. So that's unlawful. The purpose of the bar, we've discussed this, we've written much about it in the books. You find it on our website. You find it within our courses that the purpose of the bar was to move us from common law or natural law over to civil law, to turn our courts into courts of injustice, to open up chancery courts, and to do away with a common law court. And that began before we were even a nation yet. At that point in time, it was 1750, we were still the colonies. And the king sent those swarms of bar attorneys in order to destroy our court system. And before we even became a nation, they had already destroyed quite a few court systems throughout our colonies. So anyway, we need to return back to who we are as a people. And this, resurrection, so to speak, of our indictment, giving us the opportunity to do a presentment in order to present this indictment, but really get into other information concerning our courts and what we think that that Trump should do. Every federal judge has broken the law. Every federal judge has closed the doors of justice. They refuse us our natural law republic. So, that's why we're going to be doing this paperwork and sending it out. Now, we've asked for some funding for this. We've asked people to give us some money so that we could do this. You know, we're nowhere as rich or anything. We're struggling along as always anyway, just maintaining, keeping the lights on and doing what we can. But every once in a while, we do a campaign. We did a campaign for constitutional sheriffs. That was a pretty good campaign. We did get a lot of people back then that was responded and given money, helping us to send books to all the sheriffs across the nation. Now, we didn't accomplish every single one of them, but we did accomplish quite a few of them. So we did get a lot of books out to sheriffs. The other thing we really have been working on doing this is really, you know, to bring our courts back together again into courts of justice, as we mentioned. But we have to get rid of the judges. Every single one of them should be removed. The original 13th Amendment, which was removed from somewhere, you know, before 1865, the 13th Amendment was removed and replaced by another. We do have the absolute proof of this. We have records from the states recording this, and it was entered into law in 1818 or 1819. Again, this is the New World Order using the minions of the New World Order to destroy our republic, changing us into a democracy, creating political parties which no republic can survive. A republic, a natural law republic especially, okay, cannot survive parties, political parties. Yet they have convinced the people that we are a democracy. And sometimes they'll call us a democratic republic, and that's an oxymoron. Nowhere in the Constitution do you see the word democracy. The only conversation in the Federalist Papers concerning democracy was to make the point that we'll have no part of it, that the purpose of the democracy is to turn us into an oligarchy. An oligarchy is where a few people behind the scenes control, for instance, our president, which has been under control for many, many years. Let me think about this. To some degree, they've been controlled even before I was even born, going back quite some time ago. Goes back even to the turn into the 20th century. We see that there were problems with some of the presidents, and even earlier than that. But really, we've lost, we've totally lost our presidency, absolutely, when they shot President Kennedy in public. That was really the end of a president and the power and the authority. Reagan tried to take it back. Maybe a couple others might have tried to some degree, but it was almost impossible. Reagan, to some degree, understood, but he didn't have really the ability to do what needed to be done. And Trump was able to. He was the only person. I don't know, he's a very unique individual. To be able to have the knowledge, the ability to really do what he's doing. So by God's mercy, I believe we're going to return, get our republic back. But anyway, democracy is not part. Also, slavery was a problem. That was also done by Democrats. They really pushed forward and required slavery in the Constitution. They did not want to get rid of slavery. At that point in time, they were called the Federalists. Sounds like something good, Federalists. Jefferson was upset with that because he said, we're all Federalists. And he was upset that they took that name and was doing things to try to, affect our Constitution. And one place they did do a good job affecting it is with the slavery. They maintained slavery. And that didn't end, of course, until Lincoln's day. I'm going to open up. Let's see if we got anybody in the queue. Hopefully we got someone in the queue. Well, nobody in the queue. Anybody has any questions, comments, or anything we might want to talk about? Meanwhile, we'll take a quick look at another thing. We'll take a look at a paper. The presentments that we've sent to the president can be found right here on the front page. We sent a redress of grievances to open our natural law courts with a cover letter to President Trump and his entire administration, as I mentioned earlier. We also sent a presentment to President Trump and A.G. Bondi, and we sent another one to President Trump alone, and we copied everybody anyway. We always copy about 45 or 47 people to whatever we sent to President. We did an indictment upon the federal judiciary. You can read about that here. We did a presentment to the United States Supreme Court with an addendum to the grand jury presentment. We will be doing this next one. Again, we'll post it up here on the top when we file it. I probably should put dates on these things, and maybe I'll get around to put some dates on this. But what I'd like to take a quick look at is the indictment. Now, the indictment on the murder of Lavoie Finnegan, see if we have a date on this. And again, *6 and 1, if you're on the phone, want to get into the queue, or should be a button to get into the queue if you've got an app or a browser. But anyway, we did file this with federal courts. It was done in 2018. So what's that? That's about, 7, 8 years ago almost. The evidence is 649 pages with 27 videos. We'll put, instead of a CD, we'll do a thumb drive to send it out. And, you know, maybe we'll send a thumb drive to everyone with all this evidence. But we will print out to Cash Patel, Bondi, and the president. We will print out in full the 649 pages. Now, here's all the people that we have discovered that were, and I'm not going to name all these people, but especially the people, well-known people, that were involved in this whole thing. Remember, the whole thing was about plutonium. That's what this whole thing was about. They wanted to get rid of these ranches, get them off the land, and start taking the plutonium and selling it to Russia. And we've got a lot of evidence leading up to the death of Lavoie Finnegan and also what happened with the Bundys and the Hammonds and the court system, the kangaroo court system out there in Washington. So we've got lots of evidence concerning that also. But here's some of the people that were directly involved. Hillary Clinton, Harry Reid, BLM Special Agent in Charge Daniel Love, Attorney General Loretta Lynch, FBI Director James Comey, the Oregon Governor. All these people were involved in this conspiracy to work with, ultimately, with Hillary Clinton's move to sell plutonium to Russia. All right, there's a whole bunch of other people here. I'm not going to read through that. This is available. This will be available to read. It's available right now up on the website. Let me see if we can get to that. Okay, let's see. You go to federal court cases, okay, and you come down to Finnegan murder indictment. And if you click on that, you'll be able to get all the information we're talking about. Now, I believe there's a lot of videos here, but a lot of these videos that you'll find are no longer available. They were up on YouTube. A lot of them were taken down. You'll find that inside the actual indictment itself. See if we can open that up here on this end. And you'll see there's links. I believe it was on this page. Maybe not. But somewhere in this document, you'll see a bunch of links. Oh, I know where it is. It's table of contents. Contents, yeah.
John, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, I've been trying to get my sound working. There's something going on with my sound. I think it was uranium, not plutonium.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, uranium. Okay.
I really, you know, I was working at the planetarium in Denver, Colorado that night. And I heard somebody had died, and I just prayed it wasn't Lavoie Finnegan. And in the back behind me, I have a Lavoie Finnegan flag. And I've studied a lot. I've read some books. I've read books by Laura Tinney. Laura Tinney is one of his daughters. And this was all a setup from beginning to end. So just wanted to put in my 2 cents. And I, a week later, I got to meet Victoria Sharp, who was one of the singing Sharps that were on their way to John Day. And I got to meet Jeanette Finnegan that day also. So this was wrong. And I hope that what you're doing will eventually get to where somebody will hear it. There's so many people that want to wreck this whole thing and never get the truth out. Thank you. I yield.
Okay. Thank you, Terry. Right, yeah, it's in the evidence on the table of contents. We've laid out a lot of the information as far as what is inside the evidence listed out here, which is, again, 649 pages of evidence. Also, these were links, YouTube links, to videos. Some of these links are clickable. And let's see if we'll have this all open up. Okay, this video is no longer available. You know, YouTube has shut us down. They have shut us down at least three times over the years that we've been doing this. We did reopen another YouTube page, and we've been posting our stuff up there, but we're really kind of hidden. We don't get many hits on there. But we're also on Rumble. At least we get hits there. But in any event, you can go through these links and see once whether some of them will work or not. What happened? Let's see. What's that? Yeah. Let me see if I can. Oh, here it is. Okay. Yep. Some of these links are working, but in any event, I'm going to prepare a place. I'm not sure how I'm going to do this yet. I don't know that I want to post all of these up onto Rumble, but I might put them in a zip. Put all these videos in a zip file and post it up so people can download all these videos that they want. And so I'll see what we'll do. I'll do something like that maybe. But we will be posting. Next week we'll be reading the paper. I'll be working on this paper all week, and the paper that was going to be, you know, sent to the president, a presentment to the president and to Bondi and to Cash Patel, and again. Copy all of the other individuals, about 45 of them, that will get copies of a lot of what we're doing. But again, we will do it in hard copy, so it'll be an impressive amount of evidence stacked to 600 and somewhat pages, and to at least the President Cash and also Bondi. To everyone else, we'll probably just put all the information onto a thumb drive. But we'll also be sending a thumb drive with the videos to the president, the attorney general, and the FBI director. Okay, there's still nobody in the queue, so I don't know if anybody has any questions or comments, anything to add to this. It's *601 if you're on the phone. And app or browser should be a button. Let me close down some of this stuff now. Okay. All right. Again, anybody has anything? Okay, we do have a couple of people going into the queue now. Okay. All right, we'll take our first person coming up as anonymous. If you can give us your first name and your state, you got the mic, anonymous. Go right ahead. At least you should have it. Let's see if we can unmute you here. Okay, you've been unmuted. Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you. This is Elizabeth in Arizona. I don't want to interrupt the flow of the conversation. I'm at a point where I'm learning the difference, about equity versus law. And from what I'm seeing is that as long as, like, even when things are changed, like, say, post-devolution, the corporations are still going to be in play. There's still going to be corporations around. And I'm not sure that's a good thing. Because a lot of, like, out here, there are actually even veterinary clinics who've gone into the corporation. So there's, like, a liability protection, and they don't have any, they're not held accountable. And so I guess I'm trying to understand how it would work, because on my learning curve, it looks like the equity law is still going to be around, even if we have common law. But I guess that's as far as I can see. And then I guess I would approach, the individuals in the corporation, instead of the company or whatever. I'm just wondering if they're still going to have some sort of you know, immunity from common law being being in a corporate, you know, equity situation.
Well, yeah, let me respond to that. In 1872, through the Organic Act of 1872, that is when they incorporated the United States. And when they incorporated the United States, they had been working on this for a long time, and they constructed all kinds of different acts and law that they wanted to pass over a period of time. And of course, that is, they've continued to build and construct on top of the Organic Act. Trump is very much aware of the Organic Act of 1872. He's very much aware of the fact that they created a corporation and placed our republic into that corporation and took control little by little as time went on. They took control of our legislators, and eventually they took a control, of course, of our Senate also. They were working in the states. They were working everywhere. I mean, they were really busy working to build this up. You know, look, at this whole thing could be destroyed by the pulling of a string or two, literally speaking. You see, once you get rid of the Organic Act of 1872, everything built upon it also falls with it. Now, there's nothing wrong with corporations. Corporations have its purpose, okay? Mm-hmm. But it is true that we have to get rid of the corporation called the U.S. Inc., United States Inc., which created this whole. Now, when it comes to equity is important because it's written up in our Constitution that the law of the land is both equity and law. And again, equity is what's called positive law. It is legislative law. And I'll give you, for instance, U.S. Of all of this, 57 titles of law on a federal level altogether, 57 of them. Actually, one I think is really blank, so there's actually 56, but it's numbered out of 57. There is, for instance, U.S. Title III controls the president. That's like about 1,000 pages. It gets into the detail, the powers and the authorities, what a president can do, and so on and so forth. And it's very important, and this was written, you know, all of these things were written a long time ago. So it's good stuff, it's good law, you know, and it is controlling law, again, and it's appropriate. You know, there's a U.S. Title II for Congress. There's the general provisions, which is Title I. What controls, let's say, for instance, you have education under U.S.C. Title 20, okay, food and drug under U.S.C. Title 21, and so on, all the way up to 57. There's wildlife under U.S.C. Title 56. So it's all appropriate, because what that is doing, it is controlling factors. It's law written by our legislators to control the agents within certain agencies, lay out the regulations, what they can do, what they can't do, and write a lot of you know, controlling factors as statutes that becomes law for them. But nowhere can they use that and apply it against we the people. Now, equity was always meant to, you know, to be governed by the laws, by the rules of common law, okay? That was discarded, as I mentioned a little earlier, through the Rules Enabling Act of 1934.
What's that again? What did you call it?
The 1934 Rules Enabling Act.
Oh, okay, Rules Enabling Act, okay.
Right, and then the Supreme Court passed those rules in 1938, okay? Now, the Bar Association wrote this. The Bar Association wrote all these things. You know, the individuals in the bar that are in the know, that are truly the enemies of we the people, enemies of our Constitution, enemies of the United States of America, both foreign and domestic, they wrote these different things that really brought us into slavery, ultimately. And it took control of the president, and then, you know, then you have the 17th Amendment that took control of the Senate. You know, the states have no say whatsoever at all what goes on in the federal government because they don't control their senators. You know, that was a balance of power. The people had the power to control what is written in you know, our legislation to some degree through Congress, and the states had control through the Senate. Okay. And, you know, there were certain things that the Senate had powers and authorities over for instance, approving, for instance, people who have filled federal seats like judges, and various other individuals. Okay, so all of that is appropriate, but it is the on the high end, you got the people who really understand what's going on. A lot of federal judges really understand what's going on, I believe, because my experience in the federal courts, they've kind of signaled to me certain things that they had knowledge of what I was talking about. And so, you know, they're all guilty. Guilty as sin. But yeah. In any event, all these judges need to go. They need to be, cast out and bring new people in. Got to get rid of the Bar Association, these people coming in with the titles of honor. Now, the Bar Association, you have individuals who become lawyers, okay, and they are taught. They're true believers. They are taught in civil law. They are taught that we are governed under, we were constructed under, like Rome, and that we're under the law of the city, and it's called civil law. We have a Roman law, which is really the same thing what we have now, but we're just calling it civil law. It's synonymous. If you go into Black's Law Dictionary, it is synonymous. Roman law and civil law are synonymous. And it finds its roots going back into Justinian. Justinian kind of rewrote Babylonian law in order to surface it up. And Babylonian law, we know that we read about that in the Bible. Babylon, you know. Babylonian law was the law of the city. It's called municipality law. And its purpose is to control the slaves, to control the people. And again, that all eventually came to where we're at. So you have these lawyers, you know, they come out of high school. They're not taught anything really, anything worthwhile concerning the law in school to begin with. So, they're just, minds of mush that's going to be framed and built upon by these bar association. And so they teach these people that common law is what's called comity, comity. And comity is where they take trial court decisions, and that's what they call common law, which is ridiculous because only and they're all really all over the place. I mean, you can build a case on that kind of law. You could build a case to prove almost anything, one side or the other. You know, when I first was learning this stuff, I was using that to a degree, until I figured out that was problematic, of course. But that's what they did. So they call that common law. Trial court decisions are common law, which is no law at all. Okay, and they whatever decisions are made on the trial court level without a jury, that is. A jury is a whole different thing because that's a court of record. It opens up a true court of law, and the decisions in a court of law cannot even be overturned by the United States Supreme Court. And the only involvement the United States Supreme Court can get into concerning a trial court decision by a jury is if someone's unalienable rights was affected in that. And they can only go in to fix that part of the problem. They can't go and overturn the decision ultimately, again, unless there is a problem. For instance, let's take forensic evidence. Maybe it's one point in time they didn't have enough knowledge. And later on, they took forensic evidence and opened up a case and saw, hey, you know, this person was innocent. They're not guilty. You know, that kind of thing the Supreme Court can get involved with. But other than that, even the United States Supreme Court has ruled on numerous occasions that the decision of a court of record is just as powerful, just as strong, and just as upholding as this court would be, meaning the United States Supreme Court. The decision said and done and finished. So anyway, they destroyed that. They've taken that away from us. Any court that runs with a jury, every single one of them is stacked. Okay, they're stacked juries. And all you have to do is read the questionnaires. I couldn't go through all the state questionnaires, but I did do the federal questionnaire. And they stack the juries because they want to know everything they can know about the individual that's going to be taking a potential seat on the jury. And this includes both the grand jury and the petit jury. whereas they'll ask them questions, what news stations do you watch? What newspapers do you read? Do you each, do you listen to CNN or ABC? Or, you know, they want to know the answers to those questions. And that tells a lot about a person by what news they watch. They'll ask them questions if they have a weapon, if they have a carrying permit, or anybody in the household. They ask them all kinds of personal questions that allows them the ability to say, well, okay, this person, we need to get on, this group of people, we need to get onto this case so that we can get the end results, which is a guilty decision on the person. Now, people that are not in the courts and have no background in the courts and they don't know what's really going on in the courts, they may find this hard to believe. But I can tell you this is what's going on in the courts. And anybody involved in the courts, that are really involved with the courts, will tell you the same thing. And they do the same thing over and over again. You know, we have filed hundreds of cases in the federal courts. Some of them on the state courts, take them into the federal courts and even county courts and town courts, very few of them, but we've done them too in the cases that we put together, particularly, for instance, non-judicial foreclosures, or did habeas corpuses. And those, of course, would be mostly, of course, in the lower courts, the state courts. All of these papers that we have filed in the courts, especially in the federal courts, they do the same thing with every case, okay? They find a way to throw them out, and it doesn't matter where they're at, whatever federal court. It could be a federal court in Washington, the state of Washington. It could be in Texas. It could be in Pennsylvania, Maine, New Hampshire, New York, New Jersey. It doesn't matter. They all do the same thing and say the same thing to kick you out of the courts if you're coming in there to go up against the status quo. Status quo meaning the government itself or major corporations. You're not going to win because the fix is in. But in any event, they control all that, and so they will set the stage, not only with the jury, but in a way to throw you out or to outright refuse to open a court of justice, which runs under natural law, and so the fact that they do the same thing no matter where they are in the nation proves the consistency of the intent of what they're doing, but also proves conspiracy, because they all do it the same way, and that proves conspiracy. And that was the purpose of really filing a lot of our cases, also with the intent at some point in time, the people who have suffered all these injuries, you know, losing their homes, going to jail, and not being afforded, habeas corpus, stack juries and all these things, it gives us the opportunity to reopen all those cases and people can get compensated for their injury. And that's our intent. It's going to be up to the people to take care of their own cases, but we have to set the stage to have that done. In order to accomplish that on the state level, we have to have federal courts that are honorable, federal courts that obey the Constitution, federal courts that don't serve a bar association. And once Trump fixes that, and I do believe he's working on that, hopefully he's going to get rid of every single judge. I don't know whether he's going to do that, and a couple of reasons in my mind I don't want to go into at the moment. But in any event, hopefully he will do that. Once we get our courts of justice back on the federal level, then it's a slam dunk on the states. Because once they violate our right of due process, we can then move that into federal court for cause, overturn whatever it is that they're doing, and force them to be obedient and open a court of justice with an untainted jury. So we can do that. I now know how to do that. I'm trying to teach people how to do that, but that's up to the people to step up and learn these things. You know, that's why we're doing committees of safety. People need to get involved with their committees of safety. Some people will be drawn towards maybe the education committee, others in the political committee, another in the judiciary committee or the militia committee, and various other committees that they may open. But the people involved in the judiciary committee, we would expect that those people are interested in the courts, what's going on, and will get a proper education, which we give. We give that proper education right here under education tab starts here. Education starts here, and you come down to court access and the common law. That's the course that's going to really teach people how the court system works. Also, we've written some books, some good books on dealing in the courts. So if you go under the Welcome tab and you come down to books by John Duresh, anybody that's going into a court, there's certain books they're going to want to have. If you're going to go into federal court, this is a book here, Understanding the Federal Courts, a very important book so that you understand how that process in the federal courts works and differs a little bit from the state courts. But generally speaking, it's pretty much the same thing. Due process is due process. But the other books, I'll be done in a second. The other two books that I think are important for people who are going into courts to have, okay, is two courts, okay, two books. One is called The Common Law Handbook, okay, and the other one is called The Common Law Court Handbook. Particularly in the courtroom, The Common Law Court Handbook is really a valuable book because I laid it out in such a way that you can get to things and thumb through things and get to things very quickly as you're in the court, you know. The Common Law Handbook in general is really instructional in many ways. It lays out also a lot of information on the common law and gives you a lot of different information. So those two books, if you're going to be in the courts, are an important books along with Understanding the Federal Court and taking the course. But I also wrote a book called Court Access in the Common Law, which has the same name as the course. The course has more stuff in it. I wrote the book first, but then I did the course. And in doing the course, it doesn't follow necessarily the chapters, so it's kind of mixed up with that, only because as I thought out the course, it had to go from a different direction than the book. But in any event, a lot of the stuff that's in the course is in that book, all kinds of forms, information, and how due process works. So anyway, it's up to the people to help to take back the states. I mean, I can only do one state, and it's New York, and maybe I can work on some other states, but that'd take forever for one person to deal with all these problems. So people need to get educated. But back to you, Liz.
Thank you. I'm going to keep it really short. I'm actually taking the course. I just have a pseudonym because I'm on an open line, and I'm just trying to be prudent in the life we are living now. So anyway, when I was first learning... I'm sorry, I'm getting an echo here. Let me get... Doggone it.
Mic is open. I don't see anyone's mic open, but go ahead.
When I started learning about the corporate back in 2016, you know, and all this stuff, equity was one of describing that whole system. So now I'm looking at law and equity, and it must be a different kind of equity, and I'm just at that point where I need to keep reading before I ask any more questions, you know. So I really appreciate your time and all you're doing, and I'm doing my best to absorb as much as I can. So thank you.
Well, anybody that has taken the course, it's a 90-hour video course that we put together a couple of years back, and I make the point in the course also, if anybody has any questions or anything, they can come to the Monday night program here and our open forum and ask some questions. We'll do the best we can to answer them. So, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let me see if we can take the next person. Let me get back into the queue here myself. Okay, this is a wireless caller. It's a 484 number. Maybe you can give us your first name and state.
Hey, unmute you. You're Tom. Hi, John. It's Tony from Montgomery County, PA.
Okay, Tony, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, so last week, and I don't want to change your subject. I wasn't sure. I came on late. And I understand. I'll watch the video tomorrow about tonight's meeting. But I went on to your course, and I tried answering the questions. And, like, you read your like, 10-page document about, the conference, the Joral Assembly and stuff. And then you have to place, like, click on the answer and move it to put it, drop it into the spot. But I can't scroll down, so I got to, like, the first 10 or 13 questions, and then it stops. Is there, like, another way to do that course? Because here in Montgomery County...
That's the first time I'm hearing this kind of a problem. We've heard of some problems that we had in the beginning, and we haven't really been getting many complaints in quite some time now, but there is information where you can get assistance in our courses. It's been so long, I'm trying to remember where. Well, like you go under technical support, and let's see if you can get someone under technical support. You might be able to get to...
Yeah, because I wanted to do it as like a course with my whole committee of safety together, like sit down and we all do it together. So we're all on the same page, because it's hard to do it when, like, say I do it and then somebody else tries to do it and they're not succeeding and they give up, and I don't want that anymore. So
right.
I'm just wondering if there's a way I can, like, do that. And I'm driving, so I can't really... I don't see what you're doing.
I'm trying to remember where it was. It's been so long since we've had any problems with the courses. There is a place where you can get some help on the courses.
Maybe I lost you.
Oh, hold on. My mic's on. Can you hear me?
Oh, wow.
Let me see if my mic is on the other side here.
Okay.
Yeah, am I coming through the others? Can anyone else hear me? Anybody hearing me? Don't know why I would be off. Harry, Jen, can you guys hear me? Hello?
Yes, I can. I just got to get back to my microphone. Sorry.
Right. Yes, it was just with Elizabeth that she was having problems with her audio. I don't know. Do you remember where we can find help for people who have problems with the course? Do you remember where that's at, that link? I thought it would be up here, but I'm not seeing it. Let me go back to tech support again. Maybe it's also here. Because I know this is really...
Yeah, if you send it to tech support, what's her name sees it.
Yeah, but she's this isn't how to get to her. Let's see. Do not use this one as support for constitutional course.
She's watching the tech support links.
Huh?
She's watching the tech support links.
Okay. All right. That's good then. So then this is where I guess you would put your question or concern in here, and make sure. I would make sure you put not only, well, you got your email and everything, and you got the phone, and be detailed on your issue. And specifically, where in the course you're at, what course you're concerned about that you're working on, that you have the problem, and you know what chapter you're on, and whatever the case may be, and then you'll get some assistance. But remember, there's a couple of ways. You know, sometimes if you have a problem scrolling down, you can try with the wheel on the left side and then scroll down like that, and up and down with using your wheel now once you click on here. So. Or you can just come down on that two-way arrow, whether you're going up or down. But that'll take you up and down. That might be the solution if you're trying to scroll down maybe on a bar that's on the right side or something, you know, that people might try to scroll down with. All right, well, anyway, hopefully that's helpful. Okay, let's see if there's anyone else in the queue. The Q&A... Okay. All right, there's no one else in the queue. We only got about 4 minutes left, so I guess nobody else has anything else. But next week, I will be reading the paper that we're going to write to the president. You know, our big focus is really on the president, but of course it is on this indictment that really an education by both Bondi and Patel really on what really took place. And they should know that the FBI, their reports from the past cannot be trusted. And the individuals that they might speak to, you know, there's still a lot of enemies among us. And it's going to take a while yet to get them all and get them out of there. But as time goes on, hopefully we'll get things cleared up better and better. And hopefully we can get back to a true republic that we should be, which is a natural law republic, and get our courts of justice back, where we can actually get justice and more control over the people. You know, look at the people in office. You know, Trump has really, really pulled together a good team of people. And I think that really showed up at the memorial for Charlie, because everything was Christ-focused. Because that's who we are. We're a Christian nation. And the king of our court is Christ. And, you know, the jury and even the grand jury, they are the king's bench. And they are expected to do the will of the king. And in our court, the king is not a judge. It's not an elected individual. And it's not even anybody that writes legislation who is not governed by legislation. It's governed by God, because God put the law into the hearts of all men. And so we know good and evil. We know thou shalt not kill. We know thou shalt not steal. And we are told to love our neighbor as ourselves for the love of God, and to love God with all our hearts and with all our soul. And these are the laws of God. And when you are sitting on a jury, you must come in with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And the reason why there are 12 people the Pettit jury is because those are the 12 witnesses to look up to discover truth, because truth is self-evident. Just like the 12 apostles were chosen for the sole purpose to be witnesses to the person of Jesus Christ, God with us. And so, again, these 12 individuals, it has to be unanimous, okay? If one person holds out and refuses to call for a guilty plea, they got to stay there until they work things out, because that jury cannot be released. And if they're going to be there for days, they're going to be there for days. And if they're going to be there for weeks, then they're going to be there for weeks. And if they're going to be there for months, they're going to be there for months. Because they cannot be released until a decision is made. And then they must come to the terms, well, we're not going to go anywhere, so we're going to have to say not guilty. Better that a guilty man go free than an innocent man be suffered the consequence of whatever the penalty might be. It could be death, it could be life imprisonment, it could be 10 years, it could be numerous things. And the other thing in common law that we must realize is that, you know, common law is not about putting people in jail. Common law is about restitution and restoring both the injured party and, if possible, the person who injured that party, and to see the pain and suffering that they caused the individual that they injured. Now, it is true, there are some people that are sociopaths or psychopaths. There's a percentage, I don't know what the percentage is, but there is a percentage of the population. You're not going to change those people's minds, you know. But generally speaking, when someone does a wrongdoing, and if they still have a heart and a conscience, then the penalty should serve as a potential of correcting that person and bringing them back into the fold, so to speak. So anyway, this is what we're under. It's called natural law. All right, anyway, we've hit 11 o'clock. And again, we'll be back next Monday. And just a reminder, we also have Bible studies on Wednesday right here in this room at 7:30 Eastern time, if people are interested. But won't be here this Wednesday because I have something to do. But we'll be back next Wednesday on the Bible studies. But we do have all our Bible studies up there also on our Rumble page. You can find that on the right side of the website to get to the Rumble page. And next week we will be reading the paper. I do intend on having this paper prepared and done, and maybe even already in the mail and moving towards Trump and Bondi and Patel. So, okay, with that, good night, everybody, and we'll see you next Monday.